New York State Attorney General Letitia James provided additional insight into her office's investigation of sexual misconduct allegations against former Governor Andrew Cuomo with the release in early November of hundreds of pages of transcripts from interviews conducted this summer by her investigators. But the newly disclosed documents also help inform the public's understanding of New York's pandemic response. To discuss what we learned from the interview with the witness who is identified as state entity employee number 2, we're joined by Bill Hammond, a senior fellow for health policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Pleasure to be here, David.
So I mentioned in my introduction that the transcript officially identifies this person as state entity employee number 2, but the content of the testimony indicates she is Dr. Elizabeth Dufort, who was the medical director in the State Department of Health's Division of Epidemiology until resigning at the end of last year. Why were the AG's investigators talking to her at all?
Well, there was a moment some people might remember if they were watching the governor's briefings where he submitted himself to a nasal swab. So they brought in this doctor from the health department to perform the swab on television. And during the course of his appearance with this doctor, he looked at her and cracked a smile and said, "You make that gown look good." She was dressed head to toe in PPE, so she had facial shield and a mask and gloves and one of those paper gowns. So she was thoroughly bundled up, and he, you know, kind of made this joke, which I think a lot of people felt was inappropriate because it had a kind of sexual connotation to it. She certainly didn't appreciate it. And right away on Twitter, people were saying, "Wow, that was sexist." It turns out that during the rehearsal, before this public appearance on TV, the governor, they rehearsed this process, and she said to him, "I'm going to be as gentle and accurate as possible." And again, he made a joking remark along the lines of, "Gentle and accurate, I've heard that before."
Right.
Now, this is according to her version of events. Because the Attorney General's office was investigating sexual harassment, and because this had happened publicly, they interviewed this doctor from the health department, who, when they interviewed her, she was already a former employee of the health department. But the interesting thing, when you read the transcript, is that the incident on television and that whole interaction with Governor Cuomo didn't come up until, I think, page 140-something of a 200-page transcript. There was this long section at the beginning where they were talking about events in the health department during the pandemic and the atmosphere in the health department and policies that were being hashed out between the governor's office and department officials and really her misgivings about how things were going. Unhappy events, unfortunate events, stuff that she ended up referring to or at least were discussed as part of a toxic atmosphere in the health department.
And I want to touch on some of those anecdotes in a second. But first, in terms of what we learned from the 209 pages of testimony from Dr. Dufort, broadly speaking, do you feel like we broke new ground in terms of our understanding about the pandemic response directed by then-Governor Cuomo? Or did it simply serve to confirm a lot of what's been widely reported, such as the sidelining of officials in the state health department?
I think it was mostly in terms of confirmation, but in order to be aware of the stuff she was talking about, you would have had to been paying pretty close attention to this controversy as it was unfolding. And some of the details she spoke about were new, and they were also coming in the context of an on-the-record, under-oath interview with official sources. There was some coverage of these issues in the media, but a lot of those were based on anonymous sources. This made the accusations that much more credible because you knew who they were coming from. You knew she was a qualified individual. She's an MD. She's an expert in epidemiology. She was directly involved in the pandemic response at a pretty high level. It's not just coming from some anonymous, disgruntled, low-level figure in the department. I mean, she's technically anonymous in the interview, but everybody knows who she is, and she's
right
on the record.
Well, in terms of those anecdotes that help our understanding of the pandemic response directed by Governor Cuomo and his staff. What stood out to you as either the most egregious or the most problematic or potentially the most deadly decision-making from Cuomo?
It's actually a little bit hard to pick. Normally, in outbreak situations, which she had seen before coronavirus, so she had dealt with an outbreak of Ebola. And in the course of that outbreak, people like her at the State Health Department were in regular contact with their counterparts at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. So it was collaboration between the state and the local officials on the ground closest to where the outbreak was actually happening so that they could share information and best practices and make sure everybody was on the same page. You know, those of us in the general public would assume that kind of stuff goes on all the time. But it turns out that key moments of the coronavirus pandemic, the health department basically had to stop having those routine conversations with the city health department because the governor's office didn't want it to happen. Now, we don't know what the rationale was for that. We just know that this doctor thought it was really inappropriate and certainly a departure from standard procedure. And she found it very frustrating and didn't understand what was going on. I think it was about message discipline. Mm-hmm. It might also have been about the sort of infamous rivalry between Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio. But, I mean, the idea that those issues would interfere with the ability of the actual public health professionals, the experts that are on the payroll of the taxpayers at both the state and city level, in the middle of a huge crisis that was a life or death situation, it's just kind of astonishing. I don't think we've heard an explanation from the governor or his people as to why this was done. It cries out for further exploration. And I'm a little surprised that the legislature hasn't already conducted a hearing where they interviewed current and former employees of the health department to find out what was really going on.
You're not really surprised, though, right?
Well, I mean, as I say, there was media coverage. There was one story in particular that came out in February of this year that talked about the contentious relationship between the governor's office and the health department. And Dr. Dufour described screaming phone calls where employees of the governor's office were screaming at officials in the health department about how to do their jobs. And the people in the health department resented it. You know, she described several instances where high-ranking officials of the health department were left in tears. And of course, some of them ended up resigning over the course of the pandemic. She mentions that there were about 28 people who left.
Yeah, they explore that in her testimony.
In addition to that incident where the state officials were barred from talking to the city officials, there was another one that would be a contender for most shocking revelation, and that was the health department was doing, for a period early in the pandemic, the health department's Wadsworth lab was the only place where you could get a test processed in the state. Testing was very limited, and Wadsworth was the only place that could do it for March and parts of April. Their first responsibility when they processed the test was to get the information back to the doctor and to the local health department so that people would be aware if there was a positive or negative result. And they had a computerized system for distributing that information. And this doctor, who again was an epidemiologist involved in the pandemic response, she discovers that the test results are not going into that system at all, that they're going to the governor's office. And this time she becomes concerned to the point that she goes to the council's office at the health department and says, this isn't right. This is not how it's supposed to be done. And part of the response of the council, according to her version, is the council said, well, you want to be a whistleblower. So that ended up resolving itself because eventually commercial labs and other, you know, academic laboratories got into the business of processing tests, and Wadsworth wasn't the exclusive provider of test results. But that is irregular in the extreme, that test results would be flowing to a political office instead of to the doctors and health professionals who needed the information.
Well, you mentioned the health officials being sidelined in the decision-making process, and I thought one of the anecdotes that really highlighted that was the Cuomo administration taking kind of a pie-in-the-sky approach to how they were going to distribute vaccine doses when they became available, thinking about the possibility of distributing 40 million doses to New Yorkers in a single month, something that health officials knew was not plausible, but they still had to spend time and energy, including on the weekend, trying to put together these types of plans. Were there any other instances that really stood out to you in terms of the health department having to follow the executive chamber in the decision-making process as opposed to the other way around?
Well, do you remember the whole cluster zone initiative?
I do.
The second wave was starting to pick up steam in October. And the governor apparently did not have a stomach for reimposing the widespread restrictions that had been in place in the spring. So his declaration was, well, this isn't widespread. We have a couple of pockets of the state where there are these outbreaks, so we're going to target restrictions to these cluster zones. And he developed what appeared to be a very elaborate set of standards for what defined a cluster zone. And then there were different color levels, you know, red, orange, yellow. Supposedly, you would move up the ladder as things got worse, and then as restrictions kicked in, you would move back down the ladder. Now, this all sounded very technical, and he provided lots of charts with numbers on them. But according to Dr. Dufour, this process did not come from the health department. I don't think she's sure where it came from, but they were looking at the standards, and they were lining it up with the data that they had, and they were saying, well, if this is the definition of a cluster zone, this other area should probably be a cluster zone. And yet the governor wasn't declaring it a cluster zone. It wasn't easy to do, but if you were following very closely what he said and the numbers he put out, you could tell that he was kind of improvising with those cluster zones. And ultimately, the courts decided that they were not legal with respect to religious institutions. He was treating synagogues and churches more strictly than he was treating other commercial establishments. Technically, he had closed down most of the program before the court ruled, but it did not bear up under close scrutiny. It's distressing to hear that he was not consulting the state's experts as he was making these policies up. It's not clear who he was consulting or if he was consulting anyone or if he and his advisors, most of whom were not health professionals, were just making stuff up. And again, I think that's something that warrants real exploration. And technically, none of this is the focus of any investigation that I'm aware of. There are investigations about sexual harassment. There's investigations of his book deal, of the VIP testing he gave to his brother and other members of his family and high-ranking officials. There are a lot of these sort of niche investigations, but there's none that's sort of looking at the heart of it, the process by which he managed the pandemic, out of which all of these other little scandals emerge.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Bill Hammond, Senior Fellow for Health Policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy. Bill, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And for listeners who want to dive into the transcripts themselves, they can visit ag.ny.gov/Cuomo Independent Investigation.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.